Accession number 13361, Mr. K. Lodge, reel 5.
Mr. K. Lodge, reel 5. Can you describe to me, Mr. Lodge, your memories, what you saw and what you heard and what was happening on the beach whilst you were in that shell hole that day?
Yeah, we were in the shell hole with these DLI wireless batteries, and I had a good view of the beach. And what I could see was the sea was full of ships, and it's all coming in, and all of the stuff is teeming ashore, mostly wagons and jeeps and that type of thing. And there was an incident on there I can remember very, very well. There was I saw a jeep come off this ship, and he ran into trouble. And the sea was right over the jeep. It was only the wind, you could only see the windscreen. And there was about two or three blokes hanging onto the windscreen of this jeep. And there was a sailor on the beach, saw this, and he swam out to that jeep with a line. And he was absolutely brilliant. Some of the best swimming I'd ever seen in my life. And if that man didn't get a medal, he should have had one. And he saved those people on the jeep. He got that line, and he got them ashore, else they would have perished. And I saw quite a few dead sailors that day, you know, just floating about on the water, because a lot of their ships had hit mines when they were coming in. But anyway, the whole beach was buzzing and everything's coming in. Though by this time, they're bringing the wounded back. And where I was, there was about that 30 on stretchers. And those people would go back on the same boats to come over with. And
were they quiet? I mean, these are the first dead and wounded you must have seen in your life.
And the first ones I'd ever seen in my life. The first dead person I saw was a German. Dead German. He was lying on the beach. That was the first dead person I'd ever seen.
Did it affect you in any way?
Not in the least. No, no.
The wounded, were they quiet? Making a noise? What have you?
No, the ones I saw was quiet. I don't know how badly they were wounded. They were just sort of lying there. They were bringing them back on jeeps. They used to have passing two on top of a jeep, you know, and they could bring them back. They used the jeep as like an ambulance. And these people were all lined up on the beach.
And didn't in any way make you feel afraid that you might finish like that?
No. Not really. I think what goes through your mind is it's him, it's not you. See? And then you just carry on. And we had there was a German prisoner we had on the beach. And there's the corporal in charge of us, he was an old soldier, he was making a German do a few chores, do this and make him do that, and he was shouting at him, what, the German national anthem? He's saying, Deutschland über alles, and the old cop was saying, no, it's Deutschland unter alles, and the German was sitting there. He had no clue what he was talking about. He was saying, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the corporal's name?
Oh, I can't think of his name, no. Can't think of names. But this German, he was just sat there, he never said a word.
How was all this massive movement being organized?
Well, it was pretty well all organized because everything was teaming ashore, but haven't been allowed to team ashore because there were some beaches it wasn't. And our beach did pretty well. I never come across any actual fighting.
When you were in the wood, had you been shown models and maps of where you were landing?
Oh, we've been shown photographs of the defences, the beach and the minefields.
Had you had lectures upon what to expect, what to do when you got there?
Yeah.
So, and did they turn out to help you? Were you able to identify your places and realise what you were doing?
Well, you get these in the briefings and that, you know, and it shows you the photographs of the defences and what you've got to get over. But when you get out there, it doesn't seem to go exactly the plan. You know, you sort of get on the beach, I'm on the beach, this is it. What I've been taught about, I'm forgetting about it. I'm looking after myself, sort of staying. Anyway, I was on that beach all day. There was some German airplanes come over and actually attacked the ships. And then as the day grew on, the tide went out. And then it exposed all the German defences. They had I don't know whether you've seen photographs, but what they were like posts dug into the seabed with a mine on. So when the boat come in, it hit the bottom of the boat and blew a hole in. Well, the tide actually took me right over the top of that. But when we saw all this after the tide went out, just God, had that tide dropped, would have all been blown up. And then the stuff was still piling in, and the wounded was going back. And it was just one big shore.
Were you bothered by anyone during the day, wanting to know who you are, what you were doing?
No. Everybody was just getting on with the job. But as I say, we were wondering where the Dunhams had got to, because we were stuck with the batteries. And then later on, we moved farther in. And then we...
What caused that? Was it just a decision on your part, or did you get some kind of message to move?
Well, we were expecting somebody to contact us. And somebody come along and pick up these batteries, because we couldn't. We weren't going to cart these around all the time. Anyway...
What did you do for food?
Oh, I had plenty of food.
Was this carried in your packs?
Yes.
You had a supply and you
Everybody
using
was issued with two 24-hour packs. They were like little cardboard boxes sealed.
What was in them?
In a tin of corned beef. What was in these packs was all this like concentrated stuff like oatmeal and meat cubes and stuff like that, where you could put them in your little tummy cooker. You can sort of make a meal out of a square block of meat, you know. But I wasn't hungry at all. I was never hungry. As I had this tin of corned beef in my pack, I didn't even touch that. All I wanted to do was issued with sweets, you know. I was just sucking sweets. I smoked them, dear, and I was smoking. I wasn't hungry at all. I must say, I never thought about eating. I was thinking about what's lying ahead here. Because it was something entirely new to me. It also felt strange, land on a strange land. No, you weren't back home. You know, a strange land. The telegraph poles was different, and the roads was different, and the houses was different. You know, people were different.
Did you see any civilians?
Well, yeah, the civilians were still there, because they had been caught up in this. Because we went over to this house, and we knocked on the door. We wanted some soaked our water, get our water bottles filled, and this old woman come out and she was just terrified. And then she...
Did she realise that she was being liberated?
Well, I don't know whether she was pleased or happy, or sorry, I don't know. Anyway, she filled the water bottles there, and that was, maybe she'd been shook up with the shelling and bombing, and then maybe she didn't realise what was happening.
Presumably the bombardment and the bombing and so on was going on whilst you were there?
Not while I was on the beach. All that had been done before you got onto the beach. That was the softening up approach. And that was for you to get onto the beach. See, by the time you got on the beach, there's supposed to be nothing there. I think you just packed in. I think you had enough. They were all, 200 or 300 of them, they were all standing. Some had suitcases, ready packed. As I see them, I stopped on the beach all day with these batteries. And then we moved farther inland, which is on a slope. The beach sloped upwards. You couldn't see any farther than the slope. And then we just slept there. And on the night time, German planes come over. And had another go at the ship. But they were just... had no chance. It was just poor, very poor opposition, just a few planes.
So you stayed on the beach overnight?
Yes.
Next morning then, what did you do?
Next morning there was a 1500 weight truck come.
So they had remembered
looking for her. Aye. They had remembered. I think the doors must have landed way down off course. Things never go to plan in the army. Never. And this 1500 weight truck come and picked it up. And we took me to where our company was.
Where were they? Company.
The company was on a main by the Tilly Road, the main road. They were dug in on there. And that was to stop any movement back into Bayer, which we did. And we had quite a busy time on that road.
Do you recall what was happening to you on that road?
Oh, yes, I recall it very, very well. On this road, you could see it dead straight. Typical French road. You see it dead straight. Hedges and trees. What we're doing, we were looking down to this road, and there was... See, at this time, the Germans were still they're confused. They hadn't really sorted themselves out. And they were trying to get up the road into Bayer, back to the units. At least that's what I thought they were doing. Anyway, there was a little German staff car come flying along the road, and we shot it up. There was two of the men, we shot them dead. But this little staff car, it was keep coming, and it ran off the road and actually bounced into one of the slit trenches and hit one of the lads on the back, because he had the tire marks on his back, but he didn't get the full weight enough to put him in the hospital. Bounced out again, ran in the ditch and turned over and stalled. Our first kill, you could see. Well, mine anyway. I don't know what the others had done the day before.
Was that the first time you'd fired your rifle?
That was the first time, right? And it was more than me fighting, everybody fighting. And whoever I did actually kill, I don't know. And we ran to this car, and there were two Germans in. I believe they were, I think they were Air Force. I think the officer said they were Air Force. One was an officer. And the little car was pretty well loaded up with brandy and cigarettes. Being on the right time where they'd been, must have been called back to the unit. We pulled these dead Germans out and we just threw them in the ditch. And we left them there. And the car, actually later on, but they used that car again, because there wasn't anything, the mechanical damage, just the windscreen and the bodywork, And then there was, oh, by the way, there was a German 20mm gun on the roadside, had been knocked out, and it must have maybe been by the Air Force. And that was there, that was smoldering. And there was a dead German lying on the platform, this 20mm gun. And later on today, a German, for some reason, he took fire. And there was nobody ever thought about running over and pulling him up. I watched that German burn for hours. It just burnt in his own fat, you know. And all that was left was just his ash frame of his bone. And that was it. I just thought, you know, something else I hadn't seen before. Anyway.
Was it curiosity that you watched him? Aye. Fascination?
Yeah. But to me, he was a German. He was the enemy. I couldn't care less for him. But this is it, you know. Anyway, a bit later on, there was another speck coming up the road, and it was a motorbike. And this motorbike come up, and he stopped about 100 yards away, and there was two of them sitting there, two Germans sitting on this motorbike. And they were looking, and they would be thinking, what's going on here? So they decided to turn around and go back. And they started, when they would turn the bike around on the road, they said, don't let them get away, fire. And we fired, and we killed one, and the other one got away. And somebody went down the road, and they drove the motorbike in, BMW, shaft driven. That was the motorbike we had. And then, what came up? Oh, there was like a van come up. And he come right up. I was to about, 10 yards. And he stopped where this 20mm gun was. And I fired a shot through, I put a shot through the windscreen. But I forgot, it was left-hand drive. But never mind, somebody said, don't fire. Don't fire. So then the door opened, there was a German jumped out, and he jumped into the hedge. And then an officer went over and pulled him out. He's the whitest bloke I've ever seen in my life. He was absolutely white. I maybe he's missed him by about that much, you know. Unless he was lying on the seat. And he was terrified.
Who was your officer?
Lieutenant Bell. Our platoon officer. He was in charge of us. And we had this. We got that. And then there was another vehicle come up. This time was an armoured car. And he stopped about 100 yards down the road. And he was sitting on the top looking like this with his field glasses looking. But we watched him to see where he was going to do. And he obviously was a recce, you see. And then he decided to go back. He put it in anywhere. And we opened up on him, and we shot that armoured car just with bullets, because he had all these bags were open. Anyway, we fired at this armoured car for quite a while. Then we stopped, and there was a white flag come out, or a white rag or handkerchief come out. And obviously detailed a few men, and he went down to this armoured car. I think there was about three of them in, but he was the only one alive. And he drove the armoured car back into our lines. And that armoured car was a half-track, and it was used by the cookie, if that. And the bottom of that half truck was, oh, it was about an inch of blood. Yeah, but that would shut up. Because the bullets would be going into that armoured car and they'd be ricocheting round, you know, and everything. And that was an armoured car I had. But then it stopped then. There was nothing more coming up there then. The Germans are getting a bit more organised now, like. And then we got word there was a German army column advancing down the road. And I'm not sure what day it was, the 10th. By now it's about the... And this German attack came in.
Was this a number of days after, and had you moved on?
No, I was still in these positions. We just held these positions. And we had this, what I've been telling you about, these bits of skirmishes. And then it went quiet for a day or two. And then the Germans by then had got organized. And then they decided to attack, and they attacked us, possibly to try and put a wedge, get back to Bayeux, you see, because we were on the main road. And this attack came in. Now, they knew we could hear them coming, the tracks, the tanks coming. There was Mark IV tanks, but the tanks were coming straight down the road. They were coming. They didn't spread out, they were just traversing down the road. And the infantry was behind them. And the cross fire down the road was like a wooded area. And these tanks was coming up the road. And we were sitting. And our officer issued sticky bombs. Have you ever seen a sticky bomb? Where you're supposed to run out alongside the tank and stick it on the side of the tank. And that used to knock the tank out. And we thought, well, there's no tanks going to get that near. But anyway, these tanks was coming up the road. But on the opposite side of the road, you know, we had the Cheshires with the Vickers machine gun. And we had our own anti-tank six-pounder. And crack. Our six-pounder knocked the first one out. And he finished up getting the three of them. Our six-pounder. About what? 100 yards, perhaps the farthest range, 500 yards. And he knocked the first three of them off. And I can still see, I can still remember the first one. Because I was up my rifle waiting for somebody bailing out. And there was nobody bailed out. And this fella, that was the mate, he says, he pulled me down. He says, look, he says, if you don't want your head blown off, lad, get down here. So I was sitting at the bottom of the trench then. Sitting there, and the Vickers machine gun was firing. It never ceased. Our Vickers with the Cheshire regiment on attachment, he was firing at them, and the three mortars was pounding them. And we just sat in the trench, and we watched the bullets go. Going past the trench, I just thought, wait, somebody baby up there, you know. And there was a few apple trees there, and they were snicking the blossom off the tree, and it was floating down. I thought that was funny, that. And it was floating down. Anyway, the attack just petered out. The 3-inch mortars absolutely hammered them. So she fired them. Then they gave it up, and they went back, and they left these three Mark IV tanks on the road. And then that was it. Things went quiet then. And the 7th Armour passed over. They were supposed to bash on the village Bacards, but they ran out of bother. And then the Gloucesters passed through, and they took up positions far farther on. And we had a couple of years rest. By By then, I was getting sleep, you know. You couldn't get much sleep. Like you would go to sleep anywhere. Because on the night time, the Royal Artillery had moved up into our positions, and I never even heard them. And had been firing all night on Tilly. And I was just lying there on the top. When I woke up, oh, this terrific barrage is going on. I'd slept through that. I was that tired. And then...
Did you get your battalion commander coming round checking and talking to you during the course of this
The battalion commander,
did you see much of him?
No. We used to see him. No, again, but not a lot. No, that was mostly your company commander.
Who was battalion commander?
I believe it was Colonel Green. Yeah. No, it was mostly his platoon officer and the company commander, Major Galloway, contacted us. And after that was a lean spell. Then after that was rough, because the Germans had got organised, because he dug in right through Tilly. That was his defensive line, right through Tilly, Verrieres and Langer, right down there, and he was determined to hold all there. And I eventually got to know what war was about then. Like. It frightened the hell out of me, I'll tell you. Up at Tilly. It's terrible up there.
You would obviously move forward into this position where you were in front of Tilly, up on that ridge there.
Yeah.
Verrieres, Langer Ridge.
Well, from the positions, our first position, we, after the Gloucesters had passed through, on June 13th, that was our first movement. We went through the Gloucesters, we started to walk up the road to Tilly to see how far we could get.
When you're advancing in that situation, close over to an enemy, what kind of marching do you do? How are you organised?
We're just like in section formation, each side of the road, spread out. You always tool spread out, never get into bunches. That was the difference for the Second World War and the First World War. That's how the First World War lost a lot of men, so being bunched together. You always had to spread out.
How were supplies coming up to you?
Well, mostly on the night time. You would get a tin of McConaughey's or a tin of Irish stew or something like that. Mostly on the night time. They would give you enough for your breakfast.
Were you able to get a warm meal?
Oh, yes.
How did you heat it?
It was brought up hot. It was done back in the echelon, and it was brought up by truck as far as it could come. There were some days it didn't do anything because the dirt didn't bring it up.
Ammunition, how did that get to you?
Oh, we always had plenty of ammo. We always carried a couple of bandoliers and Bren mags, spare pouches of Bren mags. I used to carry these extra pouches, utility pouches. Although I had my own equipment, I was also carrying another six around my neck because my mate had the Bren. Often, and I was his number two, sort of stuff. And I had to carry all the weight, spare barrel, and all these extra mags.
How much weight do you estimate you were carrying?
Oh, it's hard. I couldn't tell you exact weight what's carrying. But being a young, fit fella, it didn't seem to trouble you too much. But these extra utility pouches you carried for the band gun was heavy. You know, the certain names you rolled down, you couldn't get back up again.